You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Benedict Jones. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, January 10th, 2019.
We get into these freezing temperatures, and so really important time to take extra care of our homeless neighbors and support them so that they can come out of the winter healthy and okay and safe.
The National Weather Service is advising area listeners of a winter storm watch this weekend. In today's feature report, WFHB correspondent Annie Aguiar speaks with Shalom Center Director Forrest Gilmore about what freezing temperatures mean for the area's homeless. That's coming up in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks area residents what they think of President Donald Trump's proposed border wall. That's coming up later in the program. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb announced his proposed state budget today. WFHB's Rasha Kamhawi brings us that report.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb announced his proposed state budget today. The embattled Department of Child Services would get, in the governor's proposed budget, almost $300 million each year. This is the full amount DCS had requested. DCS has been struggling with increasing caseloads and limited resources for some time. The agency's problems came into public view last year when its former director resigned in retaliation to the cutting of funding and services by Governor Holcomb's administration. According to a report released in June by the Child Welfare Policy and Practice Group, Indiana has more youths in the child welfare system than any of the other surrounding states. The two-year state budget allocates about the same amount, or a little more, as the last state budget. Holcomb's proposal includes 2% increase in state expenditure in 2020 and a 2.5% increase for 2021. The increases are fueled by new tax revenues. Under the proposed $33 billion state budget, schools will not get a big boost. The recommended 2% increase for public education each year will keep education spending on track with inflation. A top Democrat from the Senate Appropriations Committee faulted the school funding proposal for falling below the national inflation rate of 2.2% over the past year. State funding is the main source of funding for school districts. Indiana ranks 31st among the 50 states in teacher pay in 2016. The average annual teacher salary in Indiana is about $51,000, according to the National Education Association. This is lower than Illinois, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Wisconsin. The proposed 2% increase will not be required to go towards teacher pay. This will be a decision for local school boards. There are cuts in the proposed budget. The Indianapolis Star reports one of the proposed budget cuts include the $3 million annual subsidy for the Hoosier State train. If the cut is approved, Amtrak's route from Indianapolis to Chicago would end its service. According to the Star, Holcomb proposes to keep more than $1.8 billion in reserves. That is about 11% of the budget. The Republican-dominated legislature has until late April to approve a budget. The approved budget will take effect in July. For WFHB, this is Rasha Kamhawi.
Indiana Republican Senator Mike Braun proposed a bipartisan bill on Monday that would prevent members of Congress from being paid during a government shutdown. According to an article by the Indy Star, Senator Braun co-authored the quote, no budget, no pay legislation with West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin. The bill is Braun's first as a U.S. senator, having won his seat last November after defeating incumbent Democrat Joe Donnelly. Newsweek reports that Republican Senators John Cornyn and Steve Daines introduced similar legislation today, as did Republican Representative John Curtis on Tuesday. Similar measures have been introduced in Congress before, such as Arizona Democrat Tom O'Halloran's 2017 bill called the Government Shutdown Accountability and Economic Report Act. None of these measures have passed in the House or in the Senate. In addition, the 27th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution prevents Congress from passing laws affecting their pay during the current term, which ends in January of next year. The current government shutdown began in late December with President Donald Trump having rejected any government funding bill that does not include $5 billion for his proposed border wall. Senator Braun has said that he supports Trump's position on the wall.
The majority of Bloomington Common Council members voiced their support last night for designating the Maple Heights Neighborhood and Historic Conservation District. The Maple Heights Neighborhood Association requested the designation with the Bloomington Historic Preservation Commission, which recommended it to the council. In reading the proposed ordinance, City Clerk Nicole Bolden explained the designation.
A conservation district is, in general, less restrictive than a full historic district and requires only the review of proposals to demolish or move buildings or construct new principal or accessory buildings. At the end of 3 years after adoption of this ordinance, this conservation district will elevate into a full historic district unless within 180 and 60 days before that date, the majority of the property owners provide the commission with written objections to the elevation.
The neighborhood lies north of downtown Bloomington between the Indiana Railroad tracks and 15th Street. According to Connor Hendrick, the city's historic conservation program manager, the neighborhood was once part of a 160-acre tract bought by James N. Blair in 1825. The area still contains houses that were built in the late 1800s and early 1900s.
This is a single-family neighborhood. It represents an integral part of the Bloomington story and is a familiar visual feature of the city. A local conservation district designation will ensure that these houses are not dramatically altered or lost in the future, and that the neighborhood will remain in its historic setting as a single-family residential area, thus securing the preservation of this architecture and its story for another century.
The council heard opposing views during public comment on the topic. Terry Usry, a Maple Heights property owner, told the council he supports making the area an historic conservation district.
I really like the character of the neighborhood the way it is. It's a very nice mix of affordable housing, working class people, students, faculty, and so on. I just really fear that without this kind of protection, the neighborhood will change in ways that will lose the historical nature and the character of the neighborhood. And it will become gentrified and be a bunch of McMansions, which I don't want in my neighborhood.
However, Bloomington resident Daniel Bingham was not in favor of the designation. He referred to it as a, quote, blunt instrument that ties our hands.
Maple Heights is absolutely, you know, ground zero for potential gentrification because of the trades district right there. But if you freeze the ability to add infill housing, freeze the ability to take some of these single-family homes and make them duplexes or quadplexes, then the affordability is going to drop out the bottom in that neighborhood because people who want to work and live close to the trades district are going to buy up the properties and they're going to sit in them. And they're going to be able to afford to renovate them within the bounds of the historic district code, and they're going to get more expensive that way.
Bingham also said he couldn't support creating more historic districts in the face of climate change. He advocated for what he terms more sustainable urban design.
And sustainable urban design is dense. It's walkable. It's, you know, we can definitely try to preserve some neighborhoods of single-family housing, but we need to be developing the urban core. We need to either be going up and downtown more than we are currently. Or if we want to preserve that, then we need to densify these core neighborhoods close to downtown so that more people can live in them within walking distance of downtown.
Council President Dave Rallo voiced initial support for the designation, but passed on the straw poll. In his comments, he acknowledged Bingham's comments.
I think Mr. Bingham said we can't preserve everything, and that's correct. But we can preserve some things, and we have to be judicious about what we preserve. And I think that we need to concentrate on mixes of density downtown. We have to think about mixes of income downtown and make sure that there's equity being reflected. And we have to use the tools we can to ensure that.
Council member Susan Sandberg was among those council members who supported awarding Maple Heights a historic designation, in part because of Bloomington's lack of single-family housing.
We need owner-occupied housing. We need single-family housing. We need the full array of housing that fits the needs of everybody who wants to live and work in this community. We know we have a housing shortage, but we're not going to get to where we want to go by destroying the homes that already exist that are small, efficient, and that the homeowners want to maintain in a fashion that does not blow it completely out of its livability.
Councilmember Jim Sims said that although he supports the designation, he expects the conversation around development will change.
We want to, or I think there's value in preserving some core neighborhoods. There's some that we have to do because others are protected through other means. So I think in some cases we have to do that. But I think on the other side, we're severely limiting ourselves from a growth standpoint. At some point, and so I will vote to pass for this because I believe that we need to preserve that. But I think this conversation is going to evolve eventually where we're going to have to accommodate growth, we're going to have to accommodate infill, we're going to have to accommodate density. We're just going to have to.
The council also voiced support for a historic designation for the Harvey Nelson House on South Smith Road. The farmhouse was built in 1875, and adjacent barn is from the 1930s. The next meeting of the Bloomington Common Council is this coming Wednesday, January 16th, at 6:30 p.m. in City Hall.
The Monroe County Council has appropriated $2.4 million to expand the Monroe County Youth Services Bureau facilities. The Monroe County Commissioners already approved contracting with Building Associates Incorporated, pending the council's funding approval. Juvenile Court Judge Stephen Galvin told Councilmember Marty Hawk the expansion can be paid for with existing funds in the juvenile services accounts.
I'm thrilled that we're able to do this without borrowing.
Yeah, it is important to note that for the folks who are watching this, that we are not having to ask for any specific additional taxation or any other monies. We've set this money aside as we've gone forward, and we're fortunate that we have these funds available. It behooves me to say that, again, our approach in dealing with juvenile services, which is not my approach, I stole it from Judge Taliaferro, who was the original person who came up with this, has been to try to offer services to our children, not to incarcerate, not to be punitive in our approach, and our shelter has been part and parcel of that approach, and that has saved the taxpayers literally millions and millions of dollars.
Council member Jeff McKim noted the expansion was originally expected to cost around $3 million, but the contractor and the Youth Services Bureau were able to bring the cost down without losing any features. Council President pro tempore Eric Spoonmore was among those voicing praise for the project.
Yeah, I'm just really, really proud. I know the vision for this has been, you know, dates back years and years and years, but just really proud of how all of this has come together. I think it's been done about as responsibly as we possibly could have done it. And I think it's just a great statement that county government is making, this broad support for the Youth Services Bureau. So
the expansion will create more space for counseling, recreation, and study, as well as for the youth's personal possessions. Plans also call for upgrading the roof, carpets, and restrooms. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Niehoff. Slotograph Niehoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Niehoff, law for business, community, and life.
Colder temperatures in our listening area are expected. The National Weather Service has issued a winter storm watch for this weekend with snow likely. Temperatures are expected to stay below freezing, and that can make life difficult for the area's homeless population and area service providers who give them shelter. WFHB correspondent Annie Aguiar speaks with director of the Shalom Community Center in Bloomington, Forrest Gilmore, in today's featured report.
Recent drops in temperature can exacerbate the problems faced by those experiencing homelessness. The National Healthcare for the Homeless Council says hypothermia can set in at anywhere from 32 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. When it gets cold, body heat escapes through the skin and internal temperatures can drop to dangerous lows. In Bloomington, the Shalom Community Center provides shelter, hot meals, and winter clothing for the area's homeless. Executive Director Forrest Gilmore says that as the cold approaches, that need grows.
We're hitting winter once again, and that creates life-threatening conditions for people as we get into these freezing temperatures. And so really important time to take extra care of our homeless neighbors and support them so that they can come out of the winter healthy and okay and safe.
Gilmore says the area has had very few deaths over the last decade due to cold temperatures, and that he can only remember one. Ian Tyler Stark moved to Bloomington from Cincinnati before becoming homeless. He was found dead in December of 2013 during the North American polar vortex when temperatures dropped below freezing. Stark was found in a stairwell at an apartment complex on Bloomington's north side. Bloomington police were reportedly unsure of his exact cause of death, but ruled out foul play. The day his body was found, Stark was wearing wet clothing and temperatures reached a low of 20 degrees. He was 24 years old. Gilmore says that the low amount of deaths in the area is due to services such as the Interfaith Winter Shelter, Shalom Community Center, and Wheeler Mission. Just in Bloomington, the area's estimated 300 homeless will face the cold with the help of centers like Shalom.
Shalom does a number of things. We offer both a day and overnight shelter, as well as showers, laundry, meals, that kind of thing. We have several housing programs to help people move out of homelessness into homes, long-term homes. And we try and put all those services together to help people succeed in life. So a number of different supports, certainly with this time of year when cold is so strong, our emergency services are most pertinent in helping people get off the street and address the weather safely.
It's not just deaths that have decreased in the last decade. There are fewer cases of frostbite, and temperatures in the past that would have taken fingers and toes don't, due to services from centers such as Shalom. The center works with 200 to 300 people a day, Gilmore says, and they often can't receive the help they need because of negative attitudes towards the homeless and those experiencing poverty.
Well, we see in our center 200 to 300 people a day. We know that not all of those are homeless, but a significant number of them are. On any given day, we know that there's well over 300 people experiencing homelessness in our community, adults and children. There's a significant number of people that have this basic kind of threat to their existence there because of the weather. There's a lot of stigma. There's a lot of negativity directed at people experiencing homelessness and experiencing poverty. And probably the thing that I think is most valuable is to just recognize and own the humanity of every person, including people in awful circumstances, and to just honor them and support them and care for them and help them do better.
As temperatures drop, the needs that the center addresses shift. Gilmore and his co-workers are now tasked with finding weather-appropriate clothing in addition to providing basic needs.
At most basic, we provide shelter. So we have day shelter at the Shalom Center itself from 8 to 4 every day, and then we have overnight shelter at Friends Place, which is from 5 until 7 the next morning. So that's the most basic support that we provide for people in this time of year. But we also provide meals so that people can, you know, obviously be fed, and showers, laundry. But I think probably this time of year, what's most important in terms of how the community can engage is in terms of clothing. So making sure that people have proper winter clothing so that they can handle the elements when they're outside well. And so that's everything from coats, hats, and gloves, long underwear, sleeping bag, people have to sleep outside, blanket, things of that sort that really help, especially this time of year.
The center struggles with providing the resources those dealing with poverty and homelessness need in the winter. They don't receive as many donations as they need, Gilmore says, and some people have to go without.
We are definitely not able to keep up right now with the need for cold weather clothing, and so we absolutely need support there. Hats, gloves, and coat in particular. Long underwear is really helpful too. Sleeping bags are really helpful, but we're definitely not meeting the demand, and so there's people that are going without warm weather clothing. Sweatshirts are really valuable too at this time of year. Wool socks, you know, those kinds of things.
Those wanting to donate items can bring them to the center, located at 620 South Walnut Street in Bloomington, between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., 7 days a week. For WFHB, I'm Annie Aguiar.
Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
In the recent week, the American government was shut down as a result of Donald Trump's demands for funding his wall on the Mexican-American border. Voices in the Street went out to ask area listeners if they support Trump's wall.
How do you feel about Trump's wall?
I feel that something needs to be in place where our current immigration policy will work only when people can't, when they're, like currently everything's fine and they go back, but then the repeat people that are coming back, that's what I think the problem is. Not anything with keeping people out. It's more about the people that need to go out don't come back in, because a lot of times you see three or four or five times people coming back in. I think there should be big doors everywhere on it if there is something, but as far as it being a complete waste of money, I think that people in the past have approved up to 700 miles of it in the past, and everyone's been for it in the past. It's made sense in the past, but I think a lot of it's more just politics right now.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, all the facts and research has showed that illegal crossings have dropped, keep dropping, and the migrant caravan are people coming who want to come to this country as asylum seekers or refugees to work. And most likely they're gonna work the jobs that the majority of Americans don't want to work. And they're looking for better lives in countries that our government, through various channels, seeked to destabilize as for whatever their own gains were, political, social, or economic. So I think the border wall is, I think, an absolute shame on this country.
It's not. I don't know. I don't think it's going to work. I don't know what it's for.
Trump's wall, I'm not sure what he's trying to accomplish with it. It depends on what kind of wall he's actually proposing. With $5 billion, it doesn't seem like he's going to get the wall that he had talked about earlier, so I'm not sure what he has in mind. I think a wall in certain areas of the border would be effective. There's only certain areas of the border that are actually problem areas, but...
Oh, my God. There are a lot of different sides to it. I mean, just some of this latest stuff. Oh, God. I find very, very troubling. I can see realities on both sides, but this really gets into, I'm an independent politically. Honestly, I just haven't had the time to really research it the way I really, really want to for me personally. So I'm just a little up in the air still.
So yeah, that's, I just don't think architecturally that's viable. And I think it's been documented that the majority of the kinds of crimes that he says the wall will stop enter the U.S. through other venues, not across that border. And so I think if he wants to allocate funds, they ought to go toward those particular venues instead of toward building this massive thing. Well, I don't think it's a good idea. I think there are
certain aspects of the border that we do need to work on, but I don't think like an actual wall is the best solution. But definitely, I think we need to tighten up on, you know, drugs coming in and stuff. Maybe some sort of border up on a like border security people, but not like an actual big wall, you know.
Personally, I hate it. I think it makes a division between not only Americans but Latinas here in the country that's on this side and Latinas that are on the other side, and just creates even more division than we don't even need. And when the country needs to be uniting, it's just sad.
I think he's just throwing a tinder tantrum, and it's just something that's drawing everybody's attention away from other issues. I don't know. There's a lot to think about.
I don't think it's going to work because the Democrats won't. They will find a way not to pay for that. I think so. This country has always been a country of immigration, and using that as an excuse for the people to vote for the president, the current president, I think it's pretty, smart, because the only thing that you fear is fear itself.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Andrew McKieran and Rasha Kamhawe, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Annie Aguiar.
Voices in the Street was produced by Isaac Gonzalez. Our engineer today is Wes Martin, and our theme music is provided by Ben Lumstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer, also Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next right here on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.